meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Good afternoon, everyone. Father Tom Coyce here today with you on a wonderful Wednesday. And we are in the brain-wrinkling mood, as we often are, and
just wrinkled my brain, man.
Very good. And I want to share with you, I have a couple of wonderful treats for the show today. I'm going to start off with a wonderful lady who's going to be at our parish, St. James, for a nice little Advent retreat. And since it's the day before Thanksgiving, I have to share one of the most amazing stories of American history, truly miraculous, and that would be the story of Squanto the Indian. Yes, it goes back.
Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Okay, well, the date we'll get to in a bit will be the late 1600s. We'll say 1670s, a good while before the American Revolution and the Declaration of Independence, of course, which was in 1776. And, of course, Thanksgiving became official through the act of President Abraham Lincoln. Anyways, before we get to some of those juicy historical stories, I have with us here the wonderful and talented Dr. Lisa Fortini Campbell. Maybe some of you know her, and if you've been to St. James for some of our little retreats, maybe you've heard her give her lessons and sharings. She Lisa, can you say hello real quick and see if we got you?
I certainly can. Hello, Father Tom, and to all your listeners. Very nice to be with all of you today.
Very good. Well, I'm glad I was able to hear you, and that means I think all of our listeners can hear you as well. I'm going to introduce you simply by explaining your past. But you know, the more I think about it, when you want to know who someone is, the past is not enough. You must know the future of a person. And, of course, only God knows.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
You do need a bigger boat than just. But, of course, much of the past of all of us is hidden and behind a veil. When we talk with most people in our day-to-day work, right, we don't... We only see what's before our eyes, but what's before our eyes is the product of many years often. And we don't know, we don't think of all that has gone before, and we don't think about what's to come. And actually, the dreams and the desires of what people want to be are just as important in knowing who that person is as knowing what their past was. How's that for a little brain-wrinkling introduction, Lisa?
Oh, that's fine. That's a very good one, actually.
That's the way.
And you just wrinkled my brain, man.
So we do have to. I have to explain. Dr. Lisa comes to us from a little college up on the north side of Chicago by the name of Northwestern. I think a few people might know of it. And you've been with the Kellogg School of Management. And let's see, it says here that you are specialized in customer psychology. How interesting is that?
Yes, that's right.
Customer psychology.
Always. There, that's always interesting.
Yes, analyzing people and figuring out how best to serve them. That's part of business, no doubt about it. And let's see, she lectures on these topics in open enrollment programs, branding customer insight tools, creating the market-focused organization, a program from which she is co-academic director. She also teaches in a wide variety of customized executive education programs. That's a bit of your past. But you're now retired, I'm pretty sure, because I think that was, you did step down from that full-time position not long ago. Am I right?
That's correct. In July, just of this year, I decided that I would move on to the next chapter of my life after Northwestern having been so good to me for just about 30 years. So it was a wonderful, wonderful career, wonderful opportunity, fantastic students, just a great chance to learn about people and the world. And now there are new things on the horizon.
Indeed, indeed. So I'm going to start off, though, because I've heard some of your talks in the past, and I assume, let me tell our listeners, too, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is because we are having a little Advent retreat coming up. If anybody is on the southwest side of the Chicagoland area in the beautiful little town of Lamont,
Tom Whelan, PCMD.
Or even if you're... even if you're not, you can make the beautiful drive out to the Lamont area. So you have recently taken on kind of a new hat. And I remember one of the examples you gave, and maybe we could start with this one, because you might share some of this at the retreat. The details of the retreat is Saturday, December 1st, Saturday, December 1st. At St. James of the Sag, which is 10600 South Archer Avenue, right outside of Lamont, Illinois, St. James of the Sag. We start at 8:30 in the morning, and we'll be concluding after lunch around 1 p.m. So like a morning retreat to start your Advent off with. So invite anybody who's able to come to this Advent retreat to listen to and pray with Dr. Lisa Fortini Campbell. And also we'll have Father Bruce Wren as well with us. You've teamed up before, and I know that people really enjoyed the morning retreats. Anything you want to encourage people about, Dr. Lisa?
Well, I would say the retreats are a wonderful intimate setting for all of us to be together and take up some of the things that may be able to develop our own spiritual growth during the important season of Advent, and plenty of time for fellowship, chance to talk, converse, ask questions.
Oh, yes. Hello? Lisa?
Unknown caller.
Oh, Lisa, are you there? Oh, dear. I might have lost her. Let's see where I can find her back again. Unfortunately, my Bluetooth speaker is not working, so I'm working off of the cell phone speaker here. So sorry. Let's see. Let's try to get her back. But anyways, Father Bruce Wren, one of the Legionaries of Christ priests, will be with us. And also Dr. Lisa Fortini Campbell. There will be confession time and some available prayer time in church. So let's see. Hello, Dr. Lisa? Are you there again? I apologize because since I'm using my cell phone, I'm also getting phones. I'm getting phone calls on top of this. But there you go. So I was just telling the audience the details of how to get to St. James of the Sag Church and the time of the morning of the December 1st. So, but the story that sticks in my mind that you may tell again, or certainly worth our listening audience, now that you are retired and you have taken up a tremendous job of caretaking, I remember you were saying you were up at the seminary, our seminary, and talking with some of the other professors. And when you mentioned that you have a new role in life, there was a noticeable sigh or almost a disappointment. And I love the way you explain that. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
I do. Yes, and it's quite an interesting history. I'm a 62-year-old woman, married for many, 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 many years to a wonderful man, but we never had children. And so my life as an adult woman has never been filled with the experiences of caregiving that so many of other women's lives are filled with. And as a young woman, my parents were also in full good health, and so I wasn't particularly called upon to help care for them. But over the years, as I've grown older, and once I converted to Catholicism, a whole new channel of life opened up for me in several different directions. Not only did my parents get older, and many of my older relatives in need of care, along with my husband's too, but I became a hospice volunteer. And so I spend time every week with those who are dying. One of the most wonderful experiences of my life. But even more than that, I have undertaken the care of a very elderly priest. And this is a man I met up at Mundelein Seminary when I was beginning my process of conversion 10 years ago. And we became friends and have stayed friends ever since. He's now 88 years old. And when he was 82, he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which is usually quite a fatal disease for anyone who gets it. But he survived the operation and the treatment, and I think he's probably 1 in 100.
Yeah.
Now, seven years after the fact, he's still alive, and he's working, and he's living with me and my husband. And so we watch over him and the work he continues to do, the ministry he continues to participate in. But obviously a person of that age, with all of the infirmities that age brings, needs a lot of help. And so over the summer, I came to a point where I thought to myself, you know, I really either have to continue investing hard in the work that has been my work for decades, or I can reorient into a kind of work where I really do feel God is calling me. So I retired from the university in large part to take care of him, as well as the elders in my family and my husband's family and also my patients. So I'm now immersed into the world of caregiving.
Yeah.
But the story that you're referring to was an interesting one that made me think about how the world, as we put it, looks often at the role of caregivers. We admire them in many ways. We love them in many ways. But my sense is that often we don't give them the respect that they deserve. And so one of my colleagues at the university, hearing that I was going to leave my work and opening this new area, he just said to me, I just don't know how a woman of your talents and your experience and your skill can find any satisfaction in life spending it caring for an old man.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so sad to hear that, Father, you know, because that expression that we're all called to love one another, to care for one another, to share one another's burdens, this is a perfect place to do it. But yeah. I think I've gone down in the eyes of the world, but I hope up in the eyes of God.
Yes. Well, it is a when you see someone who needs help and you ignore it, that there should be a kind of shame on me-ish kind of attitude, which is, or at least, it's too bad. I wish I could help that person or these people. But the hardness of heart that Scripture speaks about so often is obviously apparent in that kind of response, you know. So your esteem is raised in my humble estimation too. So,
well,
God love
you. Thank
you
so much. But it is interesting to think about how much of the caregiving that normally would have been done for each other by each other in generations past is now outsourced to other people, you know, whether it's caregivers for small children or after-school caregivers for teenagers or caregiving for the elderly. And there are good reasons that we have such services available, but they also cut us off from the opportunities for spiritual growth and for growth in love and charity. You know, it's even friends of mine who are my age and they the life I live is not the typical life of a person my age. They say to me, "Oh, Lisa, you know, when are you going to get your own life back?" Mm-hmm. And that's an odd question because I would say, you know, this is my life.
Yeah.
And they'll say, "Well, you know, you're at the age and stage of life where you should be traveling, voyaging around the world." And I think, well, God's given me the blessing of sailing on an ocean of the heart and growing in love. And I'd rather do that than go and visit India. So as lovely as that would be,
and even if I could,
that may be for others.
If I could even tie it to your career track of customer psychology. If you spend 20 years trying to analyze how to treat the customer well, isn't it just a money-making proposition isn't part of treating the customer well is teaching the employees to see the customers as people, not just a sale.
That's right. Not just as a walking wallet.
Exactly. And that is, I'm sure that's a key to a good consumer spirit in any company, that people you deal with are real live people. Like I said at the beginning, we look at people and we don't see their history, nor do we see their future, but God does, and that's a very key factor. So, we got to come up to our first break here. So I'm glad you were able to come on and plug our little Advent retreat. Once again, let me tell our listeners, come on out to St. James of the Sag. It's on around 107th and Route 83. Maybe if you know where that area is, it's in it's a beautiful setting. The church itself is in a beautiful setting of the forest preserves, and a beautiful little church on top of a hill, surrounded by a cemetery. And so, if you can, you want to start off a Advent with a wonderful little retreat, come on out December 1st, 8:30 till about 1 o'clock. Dr. Lisa Fortini-Campbell and Father Bruce Wren, one of the Legionaries of Christ, will be there, and I'm sure they'll share wonderful ways to begin and deepen our faith in the time of Advent. So,
well, thank you for having me on, Father.
Indeed. We look forward to seeing you then, and we'll chat again sometime.
God bless you.
Take care now.
I am Father Tom Coyes. You are listening to The Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are on WSFI 88.5 FM and 750 AM WNDZ.
You are cordially invited to celebrate the crowning of Our Lady of Cabejo Sunday morning, November 27th at 10 at St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish in Chicago. This is the 40th anniversary jubilee year of Our Lady of Cabejo, the only Vatican-approved Marian apparition in Africa. After the celebratory mass, there will be refreshments. Join us Sunday, November 27th at 10 a.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish, 1327 North Noble, Chicago. That's two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. More information available at ststandschurch.org.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
Hello, everyone. God bless you for being with us here. This is the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and usually Wednesdays are brain-wrinkling hours with Father Coyes, and I don't mean to disappoint you.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
I have shared this story before at Thanksgiving time. It's quite miraculous, and it's quite a tribute to Catholicism and Christianity in general. It plays a part in it, we could certainly get into, which we often do, try to extol the virtues of Catholicism, which is oftentimes maligned or criticized. I find myself quite often like a man defending his wife. Men out there, do you know what I'm talking about? Sometimes people will put your wife down and you see a different person, a man who defends his wife in public is a special kind of virtue, and it's that kind of virtue I truly believe that us Catholics have to have when we defend Catholicism, because so often Catholicism is in its fullness. I have to emphasize that. Is often criticized or put down in a general way. People say, oh, you can believe what you want, and I'll believe what I want, and everybody's free to think and believe what they want. But when it comes down to a point of debate or discussion of what is right or what's wrong, what is the truth and what is a fallacy, what is legend and what is real history. Anyways, that's a good little intro to the story, the Thanksgiving Day story. And this is I thought Eric Metaxas is I've mentioned him before a number of times on the show, and he's a great, shall we say, a kind of a conservative Catholic commentator. I do believe he has some misconstrued ideas of Catholicism, and in light of that, the way history is looked at. But here in this story, we're celebrating. Obviously, we remember the first Thanksgiving of the Pilgrims and the shores of Massachusetts, and we fantasize, or we have legends, we have traditions, and but I got to read what he says. I want to read you this little book. It's a very short little book, and I could get through it in the time of this show. But he says in the introduction, every once in a great while, the hand of God is easy to see. And for a brief moment, fairy tales and history are the same thing. I love that little line. Fairy tales and history are the same thing. This story about Squanto is one of those times that realization that true history is as charged with the miracles and the charm of a fairy tale is a G.K. Chesterton and a C.S. Lewis insight. They both saw that Catholicism, as it is taught, and the miracles we're asked to believe, lends itself to this kind of spirit that it is almost too hard to believe the Eucharist can actually be God present in the world in a mysterious way. The Holy Spirit can be guiding and guarding a band of believers called in a magisterial way. A priest can offer words of absolution, and the God of the universe will forgive the person's sin even when others perhaps don't. There's all sorts of strange and miraculous, almost, and they sound like fairy tales. And here is the story, the Thanksgiving story of, it's a true story. It's a true story, and I certainly believe Eric Metaxas did his research and got it. There are a few comments that I'm going to have to make along the way. The basic spirit that I want you to appreciate is the incredible role that Catholic believers, that Catholics played in this story. And as usual, we don't get the credit. But without the Catholic part of the story, it would not even be. And the spirit of a new Joseph. Squanto is compared to Joseph of the Old Testament. And it's so very true. So anyways, let me see. I'm going to give you, a little background music here. And this is how the story begins. It was in the year of our Lord, 1608. Few white men had ever seen North America, but everywhere there were various tribes of natives, some who were friendly and trusting, others who were fierce and cruel. On the chilly, gray coast of what is today called Massachusetts, there lived a tribe called the Patuxets, who were as friendly and trusting as any that lived. One of them, a boy of about 12, was called Squanto. One day, while Squanto and some other Patuxet braves were hunting for lobsters along the shore, they saw a giant vessel. It was the size of 100 canoes. The men aboard it wore strange clothing and had hair on their faces like fur. But Squanto was not frightened. He had heard of such men. These are the men who come every few years from the world across the water, Squanto told his friends. They have come to trade with us. Squanto knew that they had often brought bright beads, glittering knives, axe heads, and iron pots to exchange for animal pelts and furs. Let's see what they have brought, Squanto said, and he and his companions excitedly raced down to the water. At first, the men seemed friendly to the young braves and offered them food. But then, without warning, the men attacked.
They grabbed the trusting Patuxets and threw them to the ground, tying stiff ropes around their wrists and feet. Squanto had never been so frightened. The men dragged the Braves to their giant ship and threw them into the dark. The hold beneath the ship's deck, laughing all the while. Then they locked the hatch above. Squanto shivered in the darkness. The ropes hurt his wrists and ankles. The ship began to move, and Squanto did not know where he was going or, indeed, if he would ever see sunlight again. Why had these men done this? Squanto listened to the water lapping against the hull of the ship. Somehow he knew that he was leaving the world of his childhood forever. Days passed, and then weeks. They had traveled for so long that it seemed to Squanto they must now be on the other side of the sky, behind the moon and sun and stars. Where were they going? Then one day the ship dropped anchor. At long last they had come to land. The hatch was opened, and Squanto and his fellow captives were brought ashore. The glaring sun burned their eyes. The air was dry and hot, and everything was dusty from the great heat. Squanto did not know it yet, but he was now in the country of Spain, in a city called Malaga. One of the men from the ship roughly herded Squanto and the other Braves toward a crowd of people on the deck. One by one, the Braves were forced to stand before the jeering crowd. They were being sold as slaves. Squanto watched his companions as each one was sold and taken away forever. But God had another plan for Squanto. On the dock that morning stood a group of men who were different from the others. These men were Catholic monks, and they served God. When it was Squanto's turn to be sold, one of the monks held up a small bag of heavy coins. A man from the ship snatched the coins and shoved Squanto toward the monks. As the monks led Squanto to the monastery where they lived, they spoke kindly to him in words Squanto could not understand. The monks fed Squanto, gave him a comfortable place to sleep, and helped him understand that they meant him no harm. As time passed, the monks taught Squanto their language and about their faith. They explained that the God they worshiped saw everything that had ever happened. He knows the future as well as the past, the monks explained. And all the people in the world are God's children. God loves you, they said, and he has seen all you have been through. If you will trust him, he will use those difficulties in ways you can never imagine. The monks knew that Squanto missed his family, so they tried to help him find a way to go back home to America. Finally, they came upon a good plan. But first, Squanto would have to travel all the way to England. That's where the trading ships were that sometimes sailed across the great Atlantic Ocean to Squanto's home. So about 5 years after Squanto had first arrived in Spain, the time finally came for him to leave. He bid the dear monks farewell and traveled northward in a ship to London, England. London was an unbelievable sight. It made the city of Malaga seem as small as the Patuxet village. There were soaring towers that seemed to touch the clouds and long bridges that stretched all the way across the great river called Thames. All the streets were filled with people and horses and carriages. And in a great palace there lived a man whom the Londoners called King James. He was the great chief, the Shachem, of that entire land. The monks had sent Squanto to the home of a London merchant named John Salin. After hearing Squanto's story, Salin and his family welcomed Squanto into their home. As soon as I find another ship headed for America, Salin promised, you will be on it, Squanto. Squanto's heart leapt. He was going home, but it might be a long while before such a ship is found. Celine warned, "Until then, you will stay here with us. We will teach you our language and our ways. Perhaps you will be able to pay your passage back to America by working as a translator on one of the trading ships." Squanto sighed heavily, but at least now there was hope. He would stay in London with the Salines and work in their stables until a ship was found that could carry him home. At last, 5 long years passed. In the year 1618, a ship was found. Squanto could hardly believe it. It had been 10 years since he had been kidnapped from Patuxet as a boy of 12. At long last, he was going home. With tears in his eyes, Squanto bid farewell to the Salines and the great city of London, with all its towers and bridges. Then Squanto boarded the ship and sailed westward toward America. Far across the Atlantic Ocean, the ship stopped in Newfoundland at a large trading post where it would remain until spring. Again, Squanto waited. When at last spring arrived, Squanto boarded the ship one more time. As the many days passed, Squanto thought back over the last 10 years. Had he imagined them? Was he really going home? Then one day, as Squanto stood peering across the waters, he saw land. "Land ho!" they yelled. "Hooray!" he shouted. As the ship drew closer, Squanto saw that he was not far from where he had been kidnapped all those years ago. "Home," he thought. Squanto went ashore and immediately began running towards his village. But something was wrong. The fields around the village were empty and unattended. There was no one on the path to greet him. When he reached the village, there wasn't a soul to be seen. Not even a dog barked at his arrival. What had happened? Worried and confused, Squanto walked to the village of a neighboring tribe some miles away. There, Squanto learned the terrible news. While he had been away, a terrible illness had struck. His whole village had become sick. No one had survived. This news was more than Squanto could bear. Had his years of exile and his long journey back been for nothing? How could God allow this to happen? For a time, Squanto lived with his neighboring tribe, but as he watched the happy families all around him, his sadness only grew. Finally, he went to live in the woods by himself. There, Squanto sat, listening to the wind and to the birds singing in the swaying trees. As he pondered the great sorrow in his heart, he talked to God. When the trees began to bud again, a tribesman from another village came to visit Squanto. His name was Samoset, and he told an amazing story. The year before, a shipload of families had come and settled in Patuxet, in the very place where Squanto had lived as a boy. Samoset told Squanto he must come and see them. Squanto agreed. When Squanto came to the edge of what had once been his village, he marveled at the changes that had been made. Then he saw them, English people. They spoke and dressed just like those who had been so kind to him in London. Squanto rejoiced to see children again playing on the land where he himself had played. Squanto approached the English people and began speaking to them in their own language. "Good morning," he called. "My name is Squanto." The English were so amazed that they could not speak. How did this native know their language so well? Then Squanto told them the sad story of his kidnapping, of his time in Spain and London, and of his long journey home. Then the English people
Excuse me. Then the English people told Squanto of their own search for a home, because these people, who were called pilgrims, chose to worship God differently from other English people in London. Many of them had been arrested and thrown into jail, so they had left England and traveled to Holland, where they lived for several years. But when the pilgrims saw that their children were forgetting the English ways and were picking up the habits of the new country, the pilgrims decided to travel across the ocean to the new world. They trusted that God would lead them to a new home. And God led us to this very spot, one of the pilgrims said. We have named it Plymouth, in honor of the town in England where we once lived. Then they told Squanto about the terrible first winter in their new home. Half of them had died from sickness and starvation. We didn't have time to build proper houses, they explained. The winds were bitter, and the cold came in through the cracks of our huts. Many of us were already sick and weakened from the long journey across the ocean. And then there wasn't enough food. As the pilgrims told their story, the sorrow in their voices broke Squanto's heart. He knew what it was like to lose loved ones, to be afraid. William Bradford, the governor of Plymouth, then spoke. It is like the story of Joseph from the sacred scriptures, he said. Like you, Joseph was also taken from his home and sold as a slave. But God had a plan for him. Through Joseph, God was able to save many people from starving. What man had intended for evil, God intended for good. Then Bradford smiled at Squanto. Perhaps God has sent you to be our Joseph, he said. In the weeks that followed, Squanto felt like a child again. It was so good to see his village filled with people. The pilgrims worked hard to learn the ways of their new home. Squanto showed them how to plant corn by burying three kernels along with a fish for fertilizer. He taught them how to find and catch eels in the muddy stream, and he showed them the best places to look for lobsters among the sea rocks. When autumn came, the pilgrims decided to set aside time to thank God for his merciful blessings. They invited Squanto and the other braves from Somerset's tribe to join them. When the great day came, 90 warriors appeared from the forest, carrying deer, wild turkeys, and all manner of vegetables. This would be a great feast. When everyone was seated, Governor Bradford began to pray. Thank you, Lord, for sending Squanto to us. We know that your hand has been on him through all of his trials, and that you have prepared him to be our guide and our friend in a time of great need. Squanto is your living answer to our prayers and our tears. And in his heart, Squanto also thanked God for the pilgrims, for they had shown Squanto that God really had used him as part of his great plan, just as the Spanish Catholic monks had said God would do so many years ago. Hallelujah! Who but the glorious God of heaven could so miraculously weave together the wandering lives of a lonely Patuxet brave and a struggling band of English pilgrims in such a way that would bless the whole world for centuries to come? And so Eric Metaxas ends his little story with the following words. So this Thanksgiving, when you thank God for all he has given you, remember to thank him for Squanto, the Patuxet brave, who is God's wonderful gift to America in the rosy dawn of its history. Isn't that just precious? Nick, perhaps let's take our little break here now, and we have to do a few commentaries when we get back.
I am Father Tom Coyes. You are listening to the Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are on WSFI 88.5 FM and 750 AM WNDZ.
You are cordially invited to celebrate the crowning of Our Lady of Cabejo Sunday morning, November 27th at 10 at St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish in Chicago. This is the 40th anniversary jubilee year of Our Lady of Cabejo, the only Vatican-approved Marian apparition in Africa. After the celebratory mass, there will be refreshments. Join us Sunday, November 27th at 10 a.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish, 1327 North Noble, Chicago. That's two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. More information available at ststandschurch.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, and you're listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org, ststandschicago.org. Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyes here. I'm on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and I hope you had a chance to hear that beautiful story about Squanto, the amazing Indian.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
I want to thank you. Can get that little book from Eric Metaskis. It's easily gotten on Amazon or any other place you shop for books. So a free plug for Eric's book. Even though I've challenged Eric on some of his theological underpinnings, especially the way he describes the Protestant Reformation, I think he's off on his understanding of history. He makes the typical Protestant mistake of thinking that history begins in 1521, or however you want to date the Reformation. So it's beautiful, and I do join him, and I want to underscore the hand of God in the story of the founding of America. I think it is good to see that you do see the hand of God in your homeland. I think everyone should. That's maybe a theological way of just saying America first, the way President Trump is saying these days, and which kind of offends people in many ways. I find it very consistent with a understanding of God, and especially an understanding of the Feast of Christ the King as well. If the president were kind of an atheist, agnostic, anti-religious kind of man, I would see him saying America first as something to be feared. But because he does have a sense of God and a fear of God in some different ways, I do think he's an example of a convert, someone who has really changed and grown and matured through his experiences in life, and he sees that he of all the riches and wealth that you can muster up and enjoy, that your life is empty if you're not trying to serve others and serve God. So that, be that as it may, the spirit of nationalism, the spirit of seeing that the hand of God is a part of your land, I think is very consistent with a religious way of looking at life. And as a matter of fact, minus the religious way of looking at life, then your politics becomes the highest science. There's a little phrase that I think primarily was popularized by Thomas Aquinas. Well, he borrowed it, as he did so many things, from Aristotle, called the highest science. Thomas Aquinas would talk about theology as the highest science. But if you don't have God in your vocabulary, or if you think God is a fable or God is untrue, then the highest science becomes political science, and politics becomes your religion. And that, I think, is very very accurate way of describing a lot of people who become agnostic and or atheist. You have to have something that sort of fits the bill of the highest science, and the politics takes that role in your life. But because our president is also trying to highlight and promote where he can and how he can, imperfectly, I would say, in different ways, but so very well done in many other ways. He's not, after all, the Pope or the Archbishop of the United States. He's just the president, and but he's trying to promote Christianity and a strong sense of fear of God, I truly believe. So that sense of theology as a science above politics is definitely present, and that's what is needed as we are thankful for our land and the land we live in. So the point that touches my heart so much, and I said it at the beginning, I hope you are able to see the incredible import that those Catholic Spanish monks played in the story. Squanto, being a modern-day Joseph, is an analogy of some sort, but the analogy, all analogies break down, of course. It was the Spanish monks that freed Joseph, in that sense. He was enslaved by the English merchants who kidnapped him in the first place. So if the analogy is to continue, that would be the like Joseph's brothers selling him into slavery, sending him to Egypt. But in the Bible, when Joseph is sent to Egypt, where the paganism rules, the natural goodness of the Pharaoh and treats Joseph well enough. Although you got to remember in the story that he was almost ready to be executed if God didn't give him that gift of reading the dreams. Right, we know that part of the story. But it was the Catholic monks who went to the market to buy him, to save him from a certain kind of enslaved life. Too bad. I'm sure they would have wanted to free all of them, but they didn't have enough money, or they had with money they had, they got Squanto. The bulk of the story rests on that monk's charity at that point, and they're seeing him as a child of God. They were against slavery back then, even
so many times people say, Catholics were for slavery. Of course, some of them were, but many weren't. And it was a papal declaration in the 1600s that first condemned slavery, even before England. England, you know, outlawed slavery before the United States. And perhaps this whole story of the American Revolution had something to do with it. We're here, and we're thinking about the hand of God in the story of our country.
Wow.
And we all, yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Indeed, indeed. Brains are meant to be wrinkled. And so we have to also see the hand of God in our own lives as well. I want you to... As we come to a close here, a new Catholic philosopher is on the scene that I really want to highlight, and I want to encourage you to read another book, because it focuses our attention on these Catholic themes that are woven in the American story, so much so that number one, they're not recognized as really belonging to the Catholic tradition, which I think they are. But lacking them, our nation will only decline and maybe collapse completely, God forbid. But the book I'm talking about, the author I'm talking about, is a guy by the name of Timothy Gordon. And his book is called The Catholic Republic: Why America Will Perish Without Rome. That is to say, the Catholic principles that Rome represents as the seat of authority of Catholicism. And here's one quote that I do believe helps us understand this story as many stories. He locates one of the great Catholic principles as the defenders of nature as moral, or natural law. The belief and the incorporation of natural law into the fabric of the United States is at heart a Catholic principle. And you might say, oh, wait a minute, well, Thomas Jefferson was certainly not Catholic, and he wrote it into the Declaration of Independence, and many other founding fathers were not Catholic, but they really were proponents of natural law. And indeed they were, but that doesn't mean that natural law was not a Catholic element. In a certain sense, there is a schizophrenia or an insincerity in the Protestant origins of the country in sort of plagiarizing, as Timothy Gordon mentions, the kind of a plagiarizing of some Catholic gems without giving credit to Catholicism. I maintain that the issues that revolve around marriage and sexuality have such a primal place in people's attitudes about religion that people that want to be divorced but don't get divorced or get divorced, and then the church says you can't remarry unless you get something called an annulment, all that kind of stuff, that has a tremendous effect on people's attitude toward religion in general. And I think that was true 500 years ago and 200 years ago and today. So we're going to come back to that, this very interesting theme, the Catholic Republic, why America will perish without Rome. But anyways, I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving Day, and I hope you enjoyed that story of Squanto. Share it with your family on Thanksgiving Day and many others. God love you. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide.